I don't think I've ever seen this before. Maybe just never noticed it. Weird Tales, the unique magazine.
Oh, yeah, this certainly is. I respect that so much.
Okay, cool. So this cover, at first glance, I thought that woman was in a bathtub.
Same. Same.
And then Dr. Satan was just interfering with a woman in the bathtub.
Why is that old man there?
And where an old man also is.
I think that's supposed to be Ascot Keane. I can't tell, though.
No.
I hope that if that's Keane, that is the worst interpretation of Keane I've ever seen.
Is Beatrice ever around any man other than Keane?
Would Beatrice dress like that?
Good question. I have a lot of questions.
I just noticed the rope around her wrist. Welcome to Undercooked Analysis, everybody. We're back to Weird Tales, the unique magazine. And sadly, we're getting near the end because we're on the penultimate Dr. Satan story, The Devil's Double. And lo and behold, our boy, he's back on the cover. He's back on the front cover. And it's listed here as The Devil's Double, a powerful tale of the ghastly blue death.
So there's going to be a Dr. Satan impersonator?
Unless Dr. Satan learned how to clone himself.
Which wouldn't even be the weirdest thing that happened in this series.
I like the idea that it's just color in verse Dr. Satan.
Photo negative Dr. Satan.
So before we continue this story, I feel we have to bring a little bit of the dregs over.
Yeah.
Okay. Just for a moment.
Just a little bit.
Just so everyone is aware, because I feel like we're going to be talking about this a lot. There was a real person named Manly Wade Wellman.
Yes. Yes. In this particular issue, Manly Wade Wellman is credited as writing The Horror Undying, a grim and gruesome story of a strange appetite, the tale of a grisly horror.
No jokes aside, a lot of the entries in this issue I want to read. Like, a lot of this sounds good, and there's a lot of names I recognize.
I definitely want to come back and mine this one for stories to read because, yeah, a lot of these sound cool. There's a story, another contender, I brought this up in the dregs as well, for I think interesting names is Seabury Quinn. Not as good as Manly Wade Wellman, of course, but Seabury Quinn writing Strange Interval, which is a curious tale of pirates and a man who is yet not a man and the spell cast by an old Obeah woman.
The thing we need to stress is that Manly Wade Wellman is apparently that dude's real name.
Yeah, not a pen name.
Yes.
No. Also, go look up the flag for Angola.
Yeah.
Yes. It's metal as fuck.
When California secedes, because it's going to be any month now, we got to, like, just make a new flag, man. Like, not that the bear one's bad, but if the fucking Angolan flag can do that, we can do something.
It's easy enough. We just put a second head on the bear, and now we're the new California Republic.
But do we want to be the new California Republic?
I want to be President Tandy's new California Republic, not...
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was when the Republic was doing good. Then, of course...
Back in my day.
They elect Kimball, and everything turns to shit.
So, if we look on the left at Books We'll Enjoy, they have the 10-cent bargains. Everyone pick... it's 6 for 50 cents. Everyone pick your six.
Ooh, okay. Definitely okay. Nudism Exposed, Sex and Marriage, Among the Nudists, The Art of Kissing, 25 Lessons in Hypnotism, and 84 Card Tricks.
It's the 10-cent bargains are the ones in the center.
Oh, sorry. Oh, shit.
Yeah, these are different titles.
Oh boy. Egyptian Dream Books got to be on there.
Yeah, I have to know what that is. I'm gonna How to Make Love, How to Entertain Guests, which it would be funny if that was just the same book as How to Make Love.
Burlesque Jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was eyeing Burlesque Jokes.
Book of 596 Riddles, which
that
is such
a random number. Yeah, what the fuck? Just make it 600. Could you really not come up with four more?
Four more riddles.
That was all they could afford. That's all they could cram into a 10-cent
book. Why? Why is there a book on how to play checkers? It's got to be one page long.
Is that a 2-page book?
The Pinocchi primer?
The what?
Am I reading that right?
Pinocchi? I don't know what the fuck that is.
The Pinocchio. The Pinocchio. It's Pinocchio.
Yeah. Oh. Another card game. That's Pinocchio. How you spell that.
I have never in my life seen the word Pinocchio written out.
Same. Wow. Okay.
I have never in my life played the game Pinocchio. So.
Oh, same.
Popular toasts.
Dude, again. Well, I was saying this to David. All of these just sound like Wheel of the Worst fodder. How to entertain guests. Fortune telling by cards. Popular toasts.
Modern ballroom dancing.
Oh, God. Fuck.
One of Cleopatra's knights. Only one of them.
I mean, if it was the one I'm thinking about, it was pretty important.
Well, intimate account of a night of orgy spent by Cleopatra and Melamon, a young Egyptian.
Just a one of them.
Just one of many. Yep. To know the real Cleopatra, you must read this book, 25 cents.
With her auburn hair and iangerous, languorous eyes, a sweet breath, a slender, seductive.
Languorous?
I thought it was languorous, but it looks like an eye. Again, this scan is terrible. So
yeah, whatever. It's not a good scan. So we're just going to have to do our best.
I need to read the title of this one and then the first sentence. Here we go. The Art of Kissing. One of the most unusual books ever published.
Kissing. Weird, right?
Ew.
Whoa. How to handle the girl who claws and struggles? Maybe what don't the force the girl to kiss you.
What the fuck?
What?
Yeah, no, I stopped way too short. The rest of this is discusses origin of kissing, why kissing is pleasant, how to kiss, how to handle the girl who claws and struggles.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck?
This next part's even more wild. Kissing parties.
Yeah.
Different kinds of kisses. Etc.
Cleopatra read this book, and then that's how we got one of Cleopatra's knights.
Oh, man. Literally infinite content. There is every time I open one of these, I lose my shit.
This is an era, such a beautiful era. Nearly 90 years gone at this point. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God.
Well, if you can't get the art of kissing figured out, you can always do 25 lessons in hypnotism. That might help. Or genuine mediumship. But yeah, we should read the story.
Hey, okay. Listeners, everyone, let us know if you want a spinoff of us just reading pulp advertisements.
Oh no, we're gonna. We already resolved to do that for some episodes. Like we've seen so many good ones.
We talked about it a while ago. I'm still down, honestly. I might have to change the title of this podcast from Undercooked Analysis to It Came from the Pulps.
Oh, that's good.
Pulpy Discharge. I think
that's pretty. I'm on the floor.
That could just be like the episode titles. Like you have Short and Shivery, Pulpy Discharge. We just read pulp shit. That'd be great. Love it.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, honestly. All right. So this is The Devil's Double, a powerful, blood chilling thrill tale about the Blue Death and the world's weirdest criminal who called himself Dr. Satan.
Oh, no. Is it just as Scott Keane rebranding himself?
Oh, my God. He finally realized he was the Wario the whole time.
God, I hope not. That's going to be so lame. All right, doing me, Alan, David again?
Alphabetical order?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chapter 1, The Mad Dancer. It was the middle of an early summer afternoon in Louisville. The sun bathed the streets with hot gold. People thronged the main avenue. Women shoppers streamed in and out of the stores. Men hurried on business. Traffic rolled in orderly haste. The middle of
women
a prosaic
be shopping,
afternoon.
Am I right?
Women be shopping. All seemed as it should be. A town car turned onto the avenue from a side street. It was a big foreign car, speaking of great wealth. Its curtains were drawn. The town car stopped before a building which was under construction. The sidewalk here was railed off to prevent pedestrians on the walk from being struck by falling bricks. But as the town car halted, a man appeared from the interior of the unfinished building. He walked unobtrusively past the car. As he passed, one of the curtains over the car windows was raised. A shaking hand came out with a newspaper wrapped package in it. The man from the building took the package. He walked back into the building again. This is what is known as a drug trade. The town car's motor raced preparatory. That's weird. To go away. The town car's motor raced preparatory to going away? What the fuck? Okay. But before it could get into motion, another car with curtained windows swung onto the avenue. This did not stop anywhere. It went in circles forever. It slowed a little near the town car, but that was all. However, in the short time of its slowing, it discharged a passenger. Of the hundreds on the avenue, only a few noticed the car, a big blue sedan. Of these few, only two or three saw the passenger get out. At first, that was...
Okay. Uh-oh.
Calm down, story. A prosaic street, crowded with prosaic people, going about their commonplace affairs. Little town. All right.
Quiet village.
All right. We need to get this out of the way to start off with. Hey, does everyone remember how our last story ended? Do we remember
last
that our
time
last
on Dr. Satan?
Do we remember how excited we were that the our next story might be a continuation of the last? Where
no.
Yes, where Ascot Keen was going to start taking drugs that kill him to track Dr. Satan in the afterlife.
Oh, right.
I do recall this, but seeing this, I kind of knowing how things go with Paul sometimes, I wasn't holding out much hope that this would continue on.
Well, this also feels very just like these are our secondary characters, ones who's going to die, or maybe both of
usually
them.
Usually it is.
Yeah, we're not actually, but it is a blue sedan, and they mentioned the blue death. So is this Ascot pulling Dr. Satan shit to, like, coax him out or something? I don't know.
You got him.
Anyway, yeah, I just wanted to make the point that our last story ended in... Our last story was insane.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was Paul getting real existential with us.
But it ended with Ascot Keen upsetting what's her face? I feel terrible.
Beatrice.
Wow. I feel like a real Ascot Keen forgetting her name. Ascot Keen sending Beatrice out to get more of the Kool-Aid that kills you temporarily.
Oh my god.
The simple solution is story. She wasn't able to find anymore.
I'm remembering now too, that was Bernard Holloway with the fucking gun that kills one person exactly from 40 miles.
Yeah, and turns them into a little gummy bear. Coming at you
also,
in waves, huh?
Also, the story that remembered that Gerse was dead.
Yes.
And yet Dr. Satan did not go to look for Gerse in the afterlife. Instead, remember, this is also the story that introduced the dictator of Texas.
Oh, yeah. It also introduced Ascot Keen's parents, and he only talks to his dad.
That's right.
There's so much happened in that story.
Fuck it, let's just read that again.
And suddenly, memories of a fonder time flooded back to the co-hosts of the podcast.
Anyway.
The mirth was short-lived.
Did you want to keep going? Or?
Yeah, I'll keep going a bit. And then, seemingly all at once, they began to stare at the discharged passenger. Once they had seen, they craned their necks to look again, shocked out of all commonplace living by what their eyes were regarding. The person who had come from the black blue sedan was a woman, a girl rather, scarcely more than 20, that's an adult. She was tall, maturely curved, strikingly lovely. She had dark hair and great dark eyes, and skin so fair that it looked snow white in contrast to the blackness of her hair and eyes.
Real quick, person who had come from the girl wasn't a woman. It was a girl. Also, she had a big ass and titties.
Like, damn.
Titties like Blau.
Titties like Blau.
Woo!
Hey, this is a girl, not a woman, you perverts. Anyway, boom!
Anyway, damn, she looked good. She had descended from the car, run a few paces to get her balance as she hit immovable ground from a moving object, and then stood still in the middle of the avenue, with surprised drivers jamming their brakes to keep from running her down. For an instant, she continued to stand there in the middle of the street as if dazed, with traffic a twin river around her. That's actually a nice line. Then cars began to stop on each side of her, and cars and staring crowds began to ring her in. And I will pass.
What's the matter with her? A woman snapped. Is she walking in her sleep? Might be, at that, a man snickered beside her. Looks like she's got a nightie on. Dazedly, the beautiful girl looked around at the crowds, and it could be seen that the nightgown simile was not far from the mark. Sheer strips of some stuff swathed her body, were draped loosely around her legs.
Girl, that was girl, all she not wore. A woman, a girl.
She's not a girl, not yet a woman.
Not yet a woman.
That was all she wore. The sheer stuff through which her form could be vaguely seen as through mist. Titties like Blau.
And an asset, don't quit.
Get low.
What is she?
The funny thing is, I wasn't even thinking of that. I was thinking of Apple Bottom Jeans and the Beach Boys.
What is
she? I love those.
A veil dancer? Snorted another man. The traffic cop from the corner began to force his way to the block up in the center of the square. Like a statue, swathed in mist, we're swathed again.
So swathed.
The girl stood in the cleared space. And now the door of the town car opened, and an elderly man stumbled out. Titties like Blau.
He was also
wearing a nightie.
He was also wearing a sheer nightie. His eyes
were
wide. Get
back in here, you stole my clothing.
Come back here, you bitch.
His eyes were wide with horror. He staggered toward the girl, hands outstretched as though groping his way. Suddenly, the girl moved. She poised one slippered foot, and from the folds of gauze that covered her, she drew a short, slim blade.
Oh, cool.
Her voice raised in a shrill, eerie incantation, the words of which could not be distinguished. She waved the sword. She began to dance. A publicity gag, someone shouted. She's a sword dancer after a newspaper write-up.
What the fuck is happening in Louisville, Kentucky?
Yeah, the crowd laughed and yelled agreement. So, hold on.
So, yeah.
A woman jumped out of a moving car.
No, was thrown, was discharged.
Was thrown from a moving car. Titties like Blau.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing a thin nightie. And is waving a sword around. And someone amidst the crowd, loudly announces, a publicity gag!
She's doing it for the gram.
Do it for the Vine!
The crowd
that was existed in the 30s.
I miss Vine.
Yeah.
Long time ago. Yeah, I think we all do.
The crowd laughed and yelled agreement. Some fool began to beat time to the girl's slow, rhythmic steps by clapping his hands. But horror was growing on the face of the elderly man from the town car. And on the face of the cop, as he came nearer through the crowd, was amazement and something like awe. "It's Jane Iver," he panted suddenly. "By the saints, Jane Iver." The dancing
Of the Kentucky Ivers.
Yeah, of the Kentucky Ivers. The dancing girl whirled more rapidly, more wildly. Her great dark eyes glittered with lurid fires. She performed her sword dance in the middle of the city's main street with more abandon. "That's the girl," shouted the man who was clapping time. "If publicity's what you want, you'll get it." And I'm tagging.
Yeah, that's the girl.
Here she goes.
Here she goes again.
Waving around
a sword.
Waving around a sword. She's got titties like blah.
There it is. We got there.
Yeah.
Made it work. Well done. The girl seemed not to hear him or that song we just did. Seemed not to hear or see anybody. Her supple left hand tore at her breast, and a strip of the gray gauze enfolding her came loose and floated to the ground, exposing her smooth white shoulders.
Girl, not a woman, a girl.
Mm-hmm. "Now you're going to town," laughed the man who clapped. "More, more." Goddamn. "Jane Iver," panted the traffic cop, tearing his way forward with ever less ceremony. "My daughter," groaned the elderly man from the town car, fighting the heedless mob between him and the girl. The girl began to sing more wildly, and now the crowd stilled a bit as a few words could be distinguished in her chant. And as more and more of the swathing gauze was torn from her body, people began looking at one another inquiringly. "Satan, my master." Some of the words of the girl's chant sounded, "Devil worship."
Cool.
The swathing gauze was nearly all on the street now, so she's nude. And a woman cried out a bit as the meaning came home to all. No publicity seeker would go quite so far. No girl would dare such censure in a mere quest for notoriety. "Let me through, damn you," shrieked the elderly man, fighting at the heedless ranks and still between him and the girl. "Get out of the way, you dumbbells," raced the cop, beginning to use his nightstick. Naturally.
Dumbbells. That's so quaint.
And he's of course he starts hitting people indiscriminately with his nightstick. "Jane Iver, let me get to her."
You know, a cop.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There was stunned silence in which the girl's chant sounded louder, more weird than ever. Then, like a concerted echo, the crowd repeated the name, "Jane Iver, Jane Iver." A young man in the outer fringe of the crowd gasped, "Good God, it is Jane Iver, most beautiful Deb in the city, daughter of John Iver, the distilling magnate, kidnapped a week ago, along with her kid brother. And now she comes back like this."
Thank you. Thank you, Frank Exposition.
"I'm just doing my job." He walks away.
Bye, Frank.
Thanks, Frank. Here's 25 cents.
See y'all next week.
Buy yourself an issue of The Art of Kissing.
Appreciate it. I'm going to need it. I'm going to a kissing party later.
I hope no girl claws and tries to struggle. Jesus.
Like this girl is. In the cleared spot on the avenue now, danced a girl with midnight hair and eyes who wore nothing but frayed high-heeled slippers. Her eyes were frenzied as she waved the slim sword above her head and chanted. And now the words of the incantation were only too clear. "Satanic majesty, I worship you. You, the devil, are my master. Death to your enemies."
I'm
tagging because there's a page break.
Her eyes, frenzied. Her hair, midnight. Her titties, like blow.
So this is an awesome scene.
Yeah.
Especially with, I mean, again, dude, if you just filmed this verbatim, this would be the most like celebrated indie cinema like for the like last 50 years. This would be so fucking good.
Especially the one guy loudly this feels, announcing who he is.
No, you have to have Frank Exposition in there. All right.
I think Frank Exposition is the net. Remember, we got to keep a running tally of all the characters we have named ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Or given distinct personalities to. Frank Exposition, he's going in the file.
Definitely. Right next to Scientist Friend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, poor Scientist Friend. We didn't even give him a name.
No. Well, neither did his friends.
That's his name.
Just Science Z Friend.
No. Oh. The crowd, coming through heedless laughter and growing confusion to terror, gave back before the girl's shimmering blade. That sword was obviously razor sharp, and she was slashing it around with horrifying abandon. The devil is my master. Death to his enemies. The pirouetting white figure circled the ring of cars and people shutting it in, and then a man yelled, "My God, look at her eyes!" The girl's black eyes seemed about to start from her head, wild white formed rim around the pupils. "She's mad! Get her before she kills somebody! Satan is my master! I worship the devil!" Screaming now, the crowd that had been laughing rolled back from the girl. The man who had been clapping time, ashen-faced, led the rush. Several other men, with a traffic cop beside them, leaped for her. "Back!" she screamed, slashing with the sword. "You are enemies of Satan! I will kill all enemies of the devil!" "Jane!" cried the elderly man, breaking at last to the milling crowd. "Jane! My own daughter! I already said that once, I have to remind myself." "Back! I'll kill!" The elderly man, sobbing, gasping, fell back from the keen blade that had darted toward his heart. "Jane, don't you know me? It's Dad!" "Back!" The traffic cop sprang at her like a tigress. She stepped away, blade flashing. The cop's face turned sickly as the blade grazed his cheek. And then the others were on her, horrified, deathly afraid of the blade in her mad fingers, but risking their lives to catch the lovely maniac before others in the crowd died to the bite of the blade. "Enemies of the devil! Enemies of the devil!" Her shrill voice was a clarion call, a bugle note of madness. But they got her at last, hands gripping, her white flesh firmly, though as compassionately as possible. Sure.
Okay, as sensually as possible.
That's what I would have put in there, but hey. The elderly man approached her as she struggled in the grip of the men, who tried to cover her writhing white body with their coats. "Jane!" he groaned. "Look at me! Recognize me! It's John Ivor, your father, Jane! I refer to myself with my last name when I talk to you." The girl only glared at him out of great eyes. The whites were lunatic rings around the pupils and tried to gouge his face with taloned fingers. "Jane Ivor," released by the kidnappers. "But insane!" the young man breathed. "Wait till I get that story into the paper. Insane heiress back from kidnap hell to do nude sword dance in the main street. I would read that. It's pretty good.
Thank you, Frank.
You're back.
Frank had to run back and be like, "Let me just give you the headline before I put it in the papers."
Extra, extra. He ran for a phone, and the knot of men holding popular debutante went with her to the town car, which still stood beside the half-completed building, and put her in it with her white-faced father. And then that is the end of chapter one.
Holy
shit! It's
back from kidnap hell to do nude sword dance in the street. Also, kissing parties. More disappointing than you think.
What's a disease you get from kissing parties?
Oh,
pneumonia? Mononucleosis. Yeah, mono. Kissing parties, mono.
It's not lupus.
I got pneumonia. From what? Kissing.
Frank, you're acting that kissing party so soon? Yeah, it was kind of disappointing. If I'd gotten the book, maybe this would have been better. You were gone for like 5 seconds.
Well, let that be a right lesson. There. Let that be a lesson to us all. Get the book.
Yeah.
Buy the book.
Chapter.
Holy shit, though.
Two. Satan's threat.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, chapter titles are back.
Yeah. No, randomly.
Yay!
The air was tense. Still. In the best private room of Louisville's finest hospital. Four people were in that room. One, tied with webbed linen to the iron bed. Okay, so the old man on the cover is her dad, not Ascot Keane.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And that's Jane's. We know that that's Jane, not Beatrice. Beatrice is always described as having kind of like red hair, like reddish brown hair. So I think that's what I remember.
I don't remember. I thought she was just like a pure brunette, but I could be wrong.
We are the foremost Maybe authorities on Dr. Satan, so.
We're doing a great job.
We sure are.
Four people were in that room. One, tied with webbed linen to the iron bed, was Jane Ivor. The second was her father, who sat with fingers gripping the edge of his chair till they showed white in the reflected sun glare from the cream-colored walls. The third was the chief of staff of the hospital, an internationally known psychiatrist. The fourth was a figure such as might have stepped out of a nightmare or a masquerade ball. Huh? This figure...
I'm here to consult you! I do have a doctorate, that's why they call me Dr. Satan!
Do you accept my claim of insurance?
Just call me General Practitioner Satan!
What? Alright, Dr. Satan, you better have a goddamn good explanation for what the fuck you're doing here. This figure was tall, spare. It was cloaked from head to heels in a red garment that enveloped it utterly. Over its face was a cloth mask, also red. On its hands were red rubber gloves, and hiding the head and hair was a red skull cap, from which projected two knobs in mockery of Lucifer's horns. Keen eyes blazed through the eye holes of the mask. Steel gray eyes, icily calm.
Oh, no. Aston Martin, what have you done?
Ha-ha, I fooled you! It was actually me the whole time.
Hey, what's up?
With the mad eyes writhed on the bed against the bonds, but her struggles were patently to get to the weird red figure, although in her eyes was stark horror of it. Satan, she whispered, Master, I must serve you. The figure uttered words which made the red mask move a bit over shrouded lips. Yes, I am Satan, and you must serve me, you hear? I hear and I obey, whispered the girl. Jane, faltered John Ivor in a cracked voice. The red-garbed figure held up a stern hand. The figures of that hand seemed shielded in fresh blood as the sunlight cut the smooth red rubber of its glove. John Ivor, Louisville's richest citizen, bit his lips for silence. The red mass moved with more words. You must serve me, even though, perhaps, I be not Satan after all. For an instant, the wildness in the girl's eyes faded a very little. Perplexity, fear, took its place. But you are Satan. You told me so many times, and you told me I must serve you. That is true, the red-clad figure droned. But I may have deceived you. Would it matter if I had deceived you? Ascot, can you?
Oh, this is more collateral, isn't it? For all Ascot's concerned, this girl is just another obstacle in the way, another clue. He's such a.
The girl said nothing for an instant. The light of perplexity was still stronger in her lovely eyes. Still was robbing the light of madness that had originally showed there. And as it did so, the doctor and the father leaned tensely forward, for perplexity is a thing of sanity, not madness. Pardon me? Would it matter if I had deceived you and was not Satan after all, but only a man? Good Lord. The red-clad figure said. Just imagine Dr. Satan burped there.
Well, that's not
how, wait, Dr. Dr. Satan never burps. Ascot Keen.
I've got tummy troubles.
It's a Tums festival.
I'm just imagining, like, he does that, and Beatrice just appears from the side to hand him a Tums. He's like, no, Beatrice, you're going to blow my cover.
What are you doing here? Get back.
The girl answered indirectly.
Dr. Satan. Wait. Entertain me for a second here. What if Beatrice rolled in, but she was dressed in a really bad Gerst disguise?
Hello, I'm Gerst.
Didn't you die? No.
No, she's still wearing the burlap sack outfit from like two episodes ago.
You mean to tell me Keen was dressed like me? Like in my dream journal?
I knew it.
The girl answered indirectly. You are Lucifer. You told me so. And you told me I must obey you and kill your enemies. I am sure it would make no... this is my voice. I am sure it would make no difference to you if I were only a man instead of Satan incarnate, said the masked lips smoothly. But you are Lucifer. It was almost a scream that came from the girl's lips, but again, there was a subtle difference from that scream and the mad laughter that had come from her lips before. Watch, commanded the red-garbed one quietly. He took off the red rubber gloves, revealing long-fingered hands that were almost inhumanly powerful.
Sure.
Watch, commanded the red-garbed one quietly. Look at how fucking strong my hands are.
Could Satan be this strong, this handsome?
This much like a bird?
Almost infinitely powerful. Come on, Paul.
Paul.
What's he going to do with those inhumanely powerful.
Inhumane.
But which yet were indisputably human. He removed the skull cap and mask from his face.
Look at my human hands. I'm not a bird person.
We're going to set the record straight once and for all.
Look at these giant hands. Notice how there's no feathers? I'm not a bird.
Nobody look! Nobody look!
Mr. John Ivor, that will be $40,000. Thank you very much. Have you guys ever seen, it's an old SNL skit where Will Ferrell is a doctor and the couple have come to pick up their baby?
No.
But Will Ferrell then calls in Tim Meadows as Dr. Poop. Says, make fun of his name all you want, but this may be the man who can save your son's life. Tim Meadows comes in a suit and says, I'm Dr. Stephen Poop. I can't do anything to help your son, but I can do this. And he just briefly does the robot and he goes, that'll be $5,000. Thank you very much.
Oh, my fucking face hurts.
That's all I can think about. Fucking ass caffeine.
She thinks she's possessed by the devil. Don't worry, I got this. Look, I'm the devil, but now I'm not. Okay, that'll be $40,000.
Here,
just give the check to my secretary in the burlap sack.
And that face, like the hands, was indisputably mortal. It was a strong face. like the hands. I bridge patrician nose over a long, firm, very strong chin. The girl half rose in spite of her bonds. Her eyes were wide and glazed as they glared at the revealed strong face. Her cheeks were white with nerve shock. You are a man, a very strong man, she whispered in a strangled voice. Then more loudly, a man, you are only a man, a very strong man with strong hands, but a man. Then I need not serve you. Oh God, you're not Lucifer and you have no power. I'm tagging out. I'm going to fucking die.
Yeah, that's...
I want to film this so badly.
Shit. Okay. Oh God. Oh God, you're not Lucifer. You're just a really strong man.
I just need a moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost long fingered hands that were almost inhumanly powerful. which means they have to have been... The way that's structured and her recognition of it means that at a glance you can tell that Ascot Keen has super strong hands. Like...
I want to love her with the strong hands.
Like, on sight, you're like, that dude's got some strong hands.
That's the first thing anybody notices about Ascot Keen. Nothing else. Just, wow, that guy has got some strong hands.
And the rest of his arms are scrawny. Like, has everyone seen the recent picture of Drake?
I'm sorry, I had to step away because my face hurts from laughing this much. Oh my god.
Drake, who has tried to be in denial about the fact that he had work done to get his abs.
Oh my god.
And he posted a recent shirtless picture. He literally just has abs and no other muscle definition at all.
Like, you're rich. Just pay for a personal trainer. I don't understand. Rich people, dude. I swear.
Yeah. They're insane. They're not human anymore. Her words stopped as though cut with the sharp sword she had waved an hour before. She dropped back to the bed. The doctor rose quickly and the father gasped. She has fainted! said the man in red quietly. Ah, another one for the faint counter. That is all.
Yeah.
A tremendous...
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, despite throughout this series, there's only been, like, I think we can count... We haven't even hit, like, double digits on faints. I was kind of surprised.
No.
That is all. A tremendous nerve shock, but she will be all right. When she comes to, she will no longer be mad. The discovery, as far as she is concerned, that the dread master she thought she must serve is only mortal will restore her sanity. Trust me, I should know. I'm a doctor. I have strong hands. The doctor stared at him, the actual doctor. I can almost believe you, Mr. Keen, he said slowly.
Except though you're when so Miss full Ivor's... of shit about everything.
Listen, I talked to the man who you left part skeletal, okay? Though when Miss Ivor was brought in here, I would have sworn nothing could ever cure her madness. Who are you, that you know the mind so well, and know so well the exact thing to do to cure her? Ascot Keen shrugged powerful shoulders.
I don't know.
there was a loud explosion as his shoulders knocked through a wall on accident.
Sorry. Are you Ascot Keen? Because it nullifies people if you're in the same room as them.
No, it doesn't matter who I am. He turned to John Ivor. But he's a well-known playboy. Whatever. He turned to John Ivor. We'll leave her here in good hands for a little while, he said. Shall we go to your home? Yes, breathed the father of the girl who had been mad. Yes, anything you say. You have saved my girl. Now, if you could only do something for my boy. That's what we shall talk about, said Ascot Keen.
They look out the window. His boy is at the middle of the street dancing with the blade naked.
Yeah. Hi, sir.
Oh, my God. Ivor's son.
There's just been a naked guy outside swinging an axe around this whole time. Fucking Satan and shit.
Woo! Yeah. Why didn't anybody tell me the door bursts open? Frank Exposition is there. He's like, he's covered in lipstick. He's just like, sorry, I was at the kissing party.
Oh, God, I'm so glad I got that book. Remember, everybody, get the book.
Get the book. 25 cents. Best you'll ever spend. Oh, did you pass?
No, but I can.
Up to you.
Page break, so I'll pass it to you.
Okay. In John Ivor's home on the Boulevard, and I quite loud. The phone had just rung, and word came from the hospital that Miss Ivor had regained consciousness and was indeed sane, though broken by some terrible experience she had gone through, and of which she refused to speak. John Ivar's face was still pale, and his hands still trembled, but in his eyes there was a measure of relief. Thank God for your arrival, he said brokenly. If there is anything I could do to... Keen waved his hand. Forget that. I'm a wealthy man. A powerful, wealthy man, and not a bird.
Look at my hand.
Look at my hand.
How fucking strong my hand is.
Look at my shoulders. I'm a wealthy man myself. Look at perhaps my... Richard. Why he's fucking flexing on this dude? I'm richer than you. What an asshole. Tell me everything about the kidnapping. I think I know most of it, but tell me anyway. John Ivar sighs.
Humor me, little man.
Seriously. Listen, little bro. It's hard to speak of it. A week ago today, my daughter Jane and my son Harold started for the country club. Jane was going to play tennis with some friends, and Harold had a golfing engagement. Really interesting people. They left and did not come back. At 6:30, an hour after they should have returned, I phoned the club. They had not gone there. No one had seen them or knew anything about them. I wasn't too much worried, however, till my man came to me with a plain envelope and said there was a message in it left by some man who refused to wait for an answer. I opened the envelope and took out the message. It was the one that has been shown in the papers, an announcement that Harold and Jane had been kidnapped and were being held for ransom, the amount of which in place of delivery would be given later. I still wasn't sure the letter was anything but the grim prank of some moron, but then the police phoned that they had just found Jane's wrecked roadster. It was in the ditch, and in the car, Ivor's voice cracked, was a man's handkerchief, saturated with chloroform, and my daughter's racket. With the racket were Harold's golf clubs. That night, I got a note demanding that I pay one for the return of my boy and girl. I was to give the money at 2 p.m, a week from that day, to a man who would receive it at a certain building under construction, where there would be no one on the sidewalk to try and stop him. I went to the police with everything. I knew it was risky, but so often kidnappers kill their victims anyway and go on with their plans as if the victims were still alive that I thought it more risky to keep the thing to myself. Keen nodded. All as I have read for myself, he said. Go on.
Ivar bit his lip. I've already read all of this, you boring old man.
Cool, I already read that.
Frank Exposition told me that on the way here.
That much you have read, but there are two things you haven't read, which no one knows about yet. One is that I paid the ransom money today, just before my girl was pushed from the blue sedan. The other, Ivar mopped his forehead with a trembling hand. I didn't have a million in cash where I could get at it. That's a terrific sum, Mr. Keen. I could only get half a million. So I wrapped that up in newspaper and gave it to the man who came to my town card for it. Half a million, Mr. Keen, and the kidnappers gave me back my daughter. Half of the pair they kidnapped! He stared beseechingly, fearfully at Keen. No one knew I was going to pay only half the ransom, yet they came in sedan with only my girl, somehow knowing in advance that I hadn't the full sum with me. He paced the library while Keen watched him. If that were all there was to it, I might think the return of half in trade for half the sum demanded was a coincidence. I might think that the kidnappers were playing the usual double-crossing game, expecting the full million but hoping to get still more by returning only my daughter. But there is more. I found this note in my pocket, thrust there by someone in the crowd, a little while after we'd got to the hospital. He handed a crumpled bit of paper to Keen, who read, John Ivor. When you deliver the other half million, you shall get your son back. Meanwhile, your daughter's madness shall be your punishment for not giving me the full sum in the first place. The note was unsigned. Page break, and I'll pass.
The note was unsigned. On the front. On the back, there was just a big drawing of Satan, and then the words, Dr. Satan, I'm Dr. Satan. I'm so happy about being Dr. Satan, and I did this. You see? Ivor said, almost pleadingly. Days ago, the kidnappers knew I was only going to give half the ransom. Though not a soul on earth but myself knew that. He jerked around. Have you any explanation? Have you any explanation for that? Keens, come on, man. Keen's long fingers touched softly.
Paul,
I'm trying to find you, but this closet, it's so deep. Where are you, Paul?
An excellent one, he said. You wouldn't understand, however, you being all poor and shit. All I can say is... $500,000, pussy.
What a bitch.
All I will say is that it only confirms my knowledge of the kidnapper. Ivor gasped. You know who he is? Keen nodded. Then, my God, man, the police. Can do nothing. If it's the person I think it is. Think! No! The kidnapper is Dr. Satan himself. You know about him, or you don't, depending on which story this is.
You know of him, the right? Ever... Wait, pulls out script. No, you don't know of him.
The ever infamous slash elusive Dr. Satan.
The world famous and completely unknown Dr. Satan.
Also, sometimes I'm famous and sometimes people don't know who I am. It's whatever.
Satan's curse is starting to rub off on me. I'm like the gray fox.
The huge sum asked made me think so in the first place, which is why I came to Louisville from New York when I first read the affair. The diabolically induced madness was another indication. The devil is my master. I serve Satan. I knew who had inspired that delusion. Yeah, great detective work, Keane. Now, the apparent magic by which the kidnapper knew you were going to pay only half the demand. Dr. Satan read your mind, my friend. Dr. Satan? Oh, he doesn't know!
He doesn't.
Fuck off!
So, Kane goes on this huge spiel, and then finally Ivor's like, okay, what the fuck are you talking about?
You insane man.
Is this a sex thing?
You insane bird man. You showed up dressed in a red devil costume.
Are you Dr. Satan? Is Dr. Satan in the room with us?
You showed up to the hospital in a red devil costume and yelled at my daughter and then took your clothes off.
Will the real Dr. Satan please stand up?
So the name means nothing to you. I wish it didn't to me, Keane said.
Oh, damn!
Oh, that burns. Oh, ooh. You can see, I can hear Dr. Satan cringing from a mile away. Oh, my heart!
He is a man who performs crime for the sheer, icy love of it. A devil if ever there was one. Your daughter, in her delusion about having been in contact with Satan himself, was not so far wrong, my friend. He strode toward the door. Don't tell the police!
There's a fucking criminal on the loose! A serial killer! Don't tell anybody!
I'm gonna fucking die!
Keane is the worst detective I have ever seen portrayed!
This is.
Oh, we're back. We're so back.
I feel like Bill Finger and Bob Kane must have read this and been like, what if we made Ascod Keane but actually smart? That's
what
our hero.
What if we made a competent protagonist? What a novel notion.
Don't tell the police or anyone else my name or my connection with this. I want to work alone. Give me 24 hours to try to track this man down and rescue your boy.
Oh my God.
He nodded and was gone. A man, Ivor thought, like a steel blade. A man to inspire hope when all hope was lost, as he had inspired it in that bizarre and still inexplicable cure of Jane Ivor. Dude, your son's dead.
Your son is so dead.
Keane, this is the part I'm waiting for Keane to go to Beatrice, and like it's because you know how he does that? He'll smash a Beatrice and go like, well, I didn't want to tell him his son's a Wallstead, but...
Yeah, no, that boy's dead.
Okay.
Nothing I can do for him.
Fuck, Peg.
Okay. My fucking cheeks hurt. Oh.
I know. Oh my God. Ow. I haven't laughed at, I mean, the other, every, this is amazing. But of course, it was apparent at once what had happened, said Keane a few minutes later. He was talking to a tall...
We literally just threw the Beatrice smash. You just mentioned.
Yes! We know Paul too well.
Oh, Paul, we have your number.
Yeah. He was talking to a tall,
don't
lovely...
Don't say that. Don't say that. Paul's going to throw the wildest shit ever at us.
I hope so. That just... No, I dare you, Paul. I dare you. Paul, prove me wrong.
Where is he going to go? I still don't know where he's going to go from chasing Dr. Satan through the afterlife, but okay. He was talking to a tall, lovely girl with deep blue eyes and reddish hair in her hotel suite. Right. The girl was Beatrice Dale, secretary, companion, right-hand man. Knowing that Dr. Satan...
Wait. Sorry. Right-hand man?
I mean...
She has been referred to as the right-hand man before.
For a while now, yeah. Yeah.
Here. Put this frumpy clothing on so no one knows I hired a woman to be my right-hand man.
Keep the burlap, keep that burlap on. No one will know your gender.
Yeah, yeah.
Why aren't you a man?
If only you were a man. Knowing that Dr. Satan was behind this.
Put on the Dr. Satan costume, my boy.
Why don't you listen, Beatrice? Why don't you dress as me and I'll dress as Dr. Satan? And we need to play this out very carefully.
It's literally that episode of fucking It's Always Sunny.
Put on these enormous gloves and now you're me.
No, put on these shoulder pads. Flex your hands like they're strong, like they're powerful, okay? Inhumanly so.
Put on these long, strong finger gloves.
No, make sure. Me. Okay, now stand in the tree and watch me from the window. Okay, watch
I'm going to leave a man bleeding window. Out. I want you to do nothing while.
Okay. Okay.
Nearly 90 years later, and the gift that keeps on giving. Knowing that Dr. Satan was behind this, we could guess at the source of the girl's madness. Dr. Satan was seen by her only in his Crimson's costume, of course. In that costume, he subtly and deliberately induced madness in her. Therefore, her cure was suggested itself. Dress as Satan did, and unmask before her, letting her see that the being she thought the devil incarnate was only a man after all. Beatrice was frowning a little. She nodded impatiently.
Duh, thanks, I got that. Yeah.
Further reminder why Beatrice is my favorite character. Yes, I could see how that cure would suggest itself, but why did Dr. Satan drive her mad in the first place? Keen sighed. It was in line with his usual process, a reign of terror among wealthy citizens, then demand for money. Satan kidnapped Jane and Harold Ivor, intending from the first to send them back to society incurably and horribly mad. With that as a precedent, no other father would hesitate a minute to part with the fortune to spare madness in his own child. Keen's icily calm gray eyes grew colder yet with bitter anger. No one knows it yet, including the police, because I won't fucking tell them. But 8 rich men in the city have received notes from Dr. Satan.
Amen. Who knows how many kids they have? So at least another victim.
Huh? Oh. Leave them alone.
Oh my God.
Keen is public enemy number one. He can't keep doing this.
Oh my God. This is why we respect Comrade Satan.
Seriously, at least he's like deliberate with what he does.
He is. Keen just omits things. Oh my God. Okay. Each note demands a sum varying from $200,000 to $500,000. Each note threatens kidnapping and induced insanity for the child of that man if the money is not paid on demand. Jane and Harold Ivor are but the first of many victims if we can't stop that red-robed devil. Beatrice Dale faced him, cheeks a little pale. A light in her eyes that Keen had never really yet really observed.
Yeah,
she was
I
done with
that.
This shit. So again, you go after this man, she murmured. Ascot, be careful. I feel this time that you may not come back, even though you literally came back from the dead and told me you wanted to die again.
And that apparently happened but we're not going to resolve it.
Nope. We're going to acknowledge it none at all. Keen's rare smile flashed out. Save your sympathies for Satan, Beatrice. This time he will be killed and our work completed.
We can't have the cops involved. I'm going to kill this guy.
No one can know.
No one can ever know!
Now this time, you're going to dress like Dr. Satan. I'm going to dress like Beatrice.
What size shoe are you? And we're going to need to wear the really long gloves, though.
And we're going to get a Bumstead in here to be me. And I'm going to watch you two.
Oh, I'm going to make coffee and not give it to you.
I'm going to not flinch when you put a little shriveled man in my hand.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they still have his body somewhere?
In like there are so many loose curiosities. There are so many loose ends of these stories that just baffle the mind.
It feels like this is still insane, but we've drifted back into like a tamer insanity.
Yeah. This is like, I feel like this should have been like the third or fourth chapter. Like what?
Again, yeah. Yeah, this feels like, this is weird. It's the penultimate issue, but it feels like, you know, two or three is where it should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've dialed it way back. This is crazy. You know what? It is a chapter break, so I'm going to pass it. I'm going to pass it here. All right.
Chapter 3, Road to Hell. At 10 o'clock of the night when Jane Ivor had a maze in the street, a tall man in an enveloping topcoat approached the unfinished building where Ivor had delivered $500,000 from his town car. The man had his coat buttoned and the rim of his hat down over his face, though the night was warm. He carried a bundle under his arm. At the building on the deserted walk, the man paused. Light from across the street shone on his ice gray eyes for an instant. Ascot, Keen. Across the street were many people. Before the building, there were none. Cool. Back from the empty sidewalk yawned the cavernous entrance of the brick shell. Steps sounded from down the walk. Keen tensed a little and looked at his watch. It was 3 minutes after 10. In his pocket was a note, one of the 8 extortion notes sent to the city's 8 leading citizens. The note read, "If you do not want your son kidnapped and returned a hopeless lunatic, you would deliver $400,000 5 minutes after 10 tonight at the address given below. Signed, Dr. Satan, coolest dude ever. Fuck you."
Hashtag hex the rich.
The given address was that of the unfinished building. The signer of the note was Dr. Satan. Wow, no, I made that start up. Damn, okay.
Oh, right, Keen remembered. My son.
Oh, yeah. I have a son. Huh.
I don't see him or his mom a lot.
Beatrice doesn't know about him. That's probably for the best.
No, Beatrice probably does.
Judy?
Yeah, that's him being here. She's just like in the background, just like glaring at him like,
"Don't worry. No, your daddy loves you very much. He's just very busy and very full of himself."
How's it going, Timmy?
Billy? My name's Paul.
Whatever. Here's a toy.
Whatever.
Bernard, this is a tiny man.
Four minutes after 10, the approaching footsteps, slow, leisurely, came yet closer. Keen looked toward them. For an instant, Keen was startled and disappointed. For the maker of the steps was a uniformed policeman. Ah, great, the fuzz. He had expected anything but that. Had expected an accomplice of Satan, perhaps disguised as a tramp, perhaps dressed as a sleek and respectable citizen. Disguise, breathed Keen. But that doesn't necessarily mean a tramp or businessman. Eyes wide with the thought, he stared harder at the approaching policeman. And his eyes narrowed and his jaw tensed, his powerful, powerful jaw. The policeman's eyes were glazed, drugged-looking. He was walking like something moved by a spring, or like a person moving in his sleep. His wide, staring eyes were fixed on Keen as they thought, as though they didn't really see him. "My God!" whispered Keen as the full extent of Dr. Satan's scheme burst home to him. "He's using the police as his messengers now! This man is hypnotized, perhaps drugged first! But what more efficient way of collecting extortion money could be devised than to have a patrolman in full uniform, apparently only walking his beat? Pick it up. Thank you, Frank Exposition.
Hey, time
You're
out.
Welcome.
Hey, Keen, stop. Stop right now.
Shut
you don't
up.
Get to be surprised. You don't get to be surprised by this shit anymore. Okay? We all know what you've seen now.
You went to the goddamn afterlife.
We all know that you know there's a drug that lets you go to the die, go to the afterlife, and come back. We know you know about psychic mind fire. We know that you know that Satan, Dr. Satan, knows how much money is in things through psychic powers. You don't get to be surprised by this anymore.
I still sometimes think about the fact that they tested that drug on a dude multiple times. They took They put him into brain death for like 12 hours every session.
Keen has spoken to a man who was dead, save for the few impulses in his body to make him look barely alive. That's a thing that happened. That was a guy that was just guarding a warehouse that Dr. Satan happened to be in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the consuming flame, yeah.
Yeah, this is so not beyond the pale. Like, this is standard at this point.
Yeah.
The policeman came nearer. Okay.
Do you remember that this man created flesh golems?
Yep.
In a plot that hinged on a clock being on a desk? Still my favorite, by the way.
I mean, the first story, he was causing death shrubs to sprout from people's heads and was killing people from a distance with Egyptian fire magic.
So fucking cool.
This was a guy. This is a guy being hypnotized. Fucking yawn.
Right. This really should be number two or three.
It should be. I think we need to rearrange these.
Yeah. We at the end of all this, we should have an episode where we have a tier list that we make and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
We'll do a big recap. Big recap, big breakdown. Let's just have fun with it.
Maybe we'll do like a live stream or something.
Oh, fuck yeah.
The policeman came nearer, glazed eyes fixed on Keen's face. He slowed as he got to Keen, as if waiting for something. Keen extended the bundle he carried. "Have you come for this?" he said, staring at the man's drugged, vacant eyes. "Perhaps," the policeman spoke. His voice was thick and pitched in a monotone. "What is in the package?" "That which will keep Malcolm Tibbetts boy from sharing the fate of Jane Ivor," said Keen. "The word?" said the patrolman. Keen was staring into those drugged eyes with all the power of his will now. And, as a result of his concentrated gaze, those eyes were flickering a bit, staring really hard. "The word is immunity," he said, quoting the password given in the letter. For a moment, the policeman hesitated, and Keen knew that his brain was struggling to catch the message of the mastermind that had hypnotized him. Where was that message coming from? Keen had to find out, and do it through this man. "Immunity is the correct word," the man said monotonously. "Give me the package." His voice trailed off as Keen continued to stare at him, hypnotically, powerfully. His eyes widened and grew perplexed. Slowly but surely, Keen's brain was hammering down the wall of hypnosis induced by Dr. Satan previously.
Another timeout.
Uh-huh.
Keen acted so shocked, but apparently he has, how to counter hypnosis by staring in his back pocket.
Yep. Yep.
Wouldn't be the first time he's used straight up mind powers. So
I mean, this is the weird thing to consider. I'm assuming that Paul Ernst had to write some of these or all of these with the assumption that someone's going to come into there somewhere in the story without having read the others. I kind of get that.
Right.
But then you can't have stories that are so inconsistent over whether people do or do not know who Dr. Satan, the primary antagonist, is. Like, you cannot be so inconsistent with what your character's expectations and knowledge are, because you want to assume that people like your story enough that they're going to read all of them. Right? Or am I insane?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, totally.
It's weird. It's just so weird. But there was going to be a bad moment, Keen realized, when the man was free of Satan's spell and not entirely under his own. "The package," the policeman reiterated vaguely, and then his eyes, clearing more and more, blinked as you stared around him, for an instant in full possession of his faculties. Hey, what the hell? What am I doing here? Who are you? What's this package you got? Are you Ascot Keen? He stepped a swift pace back from Keen, hand driving for his gun. Yep, no, shoot Keen now. Shoot Keen now.
Yes.
Please panic. This is the joint where Ivor was to have handed over the kidnapped doe. Now you're here with a bundle. By God, you must be one of the guys. Yes. Oh, please. I'm going to pass.
His gun. I am. My voice is a little gone and I'm a little lightheaded.
Yeah, no, I've been put through the ringer.
Do you want me to pick it up?
I got it.
Okay.
His gun was half drawn before Keen's eyes completed their work. He stood rigidly still in that attitude, gun half out of its holster, face hostile, staring at Keen. Keen spoke.
Knees weak, arms heavy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Limbs are powerful already.
You will do what I command, he said. The man's breathing had become regular again. His eyes were glazed once more, but not this time from the hypnosis of Dr. Satan. I will do what you command. Again. 45 seconds ago. Ascot Keen was shocked by the existence of hypnosis.
Gotta be kidding.
Oh, God.
Now he can do it. He figured it out.
Keen is really good at improvising, I guess.
I will do what you command. You were sent here for this package. Who sent you? A man in red with a red mask. Where did you meet him? He was in a blue sedan. He stepped out of it as I came near. He looked at me a long time and then told me what to do. Where were you to deliver the bundle you got from the man who brought it to this building? To the blue sedan, at the same corner. He named an intersection toward the eastern limit of the town. Keen's fist clenched. Would Dr. Satan be in that sedan again? If so, he was going to meet him in less than 15 minutes. And this time... So if I'm Keen, and not yes. a weird bird psychopath man, I immediately say, my brain immediately goes, oh, so Dr. Satan is expecting this guy to come back with a package. Hey, policeman, now that I've hypnotized you, take this package, take it to Dr. Satan, and shoot him.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Ascot Keen.
But...
is written as if, like, this is how Neil Breen would write a detective that he himself is starring as.
Oh.
But if so, it would be way more, but isn't this corrupt?
Isn't that wrong? Isn't that betraying the public's trust?
All right. So hear me out. We make the Dr. Satan movie.
Uh-huh.
Series of short films, uh-huh. And in one of them, Neil right. Breen plays Ascot Keen.
Oh, absolutely!
Yes,
we will blow the entire budget on Neil Breen, who is probably going to ask for a lot of money, but we would do it.
Oh, for sure.
Keen felt of a small egg-shaped. I'm so done with you, Ascot. Keen felt of a small egg-shaped thing he carried gingerly in his coat pocket. Bullets, knife blades, clubs. These ordinary lethal weapons could not be used on Dr. Satan for some reason.
Has anyone tried? Has anyone just, took out a gun and shot him or at him?
They have to roll at least an 18 on the, D20 to do it. And even then, Dr. Satan can just burn a couple armor slots.
He had means of protecting himself against such crude weapons. But this thing he had in his pocket... Oh, this thing. Let me tell you, it's here in his pocket, this thing. It's real important, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Better keep reading. He's got a thing. That, Keen thought, spelled death for the man. We'll go to the blue sedan, he said to the patrolman. My car is down a block. Come with me to it. Now I'm just imagining they get to Dr. Satan's car. Dr. Satan steps out, and Ascot Keen just throws an egg at him.
Keen, what the fuck?
I know you're allergic.
No one's allergic to eggs, you freak.
I wasn't aiming for you. And then he throws another egg and it hits his sedan. No, the paint! Keen just drives off, flips him off, just drives away.
You bitch!
Now I've got to take it into the shop again. Oh, man.
That's a page break, so, yeah.
Shall I?
Go for it.
Okay. I think we can get up to at least chapter 4, and then we can call it. A dark intersection with an abandoned factory on one corner, throwing dark shadow. Black shadow. Black shadow? Anyway. In the shadow, a blue sedan. The car from which Jane Ivor had been pushed that afternoon. Keen gripped the egg-shaped thing in his pocket. Then he cursed in his heart as he drew near the sedan with the cop. For there was only one person in the car, and that was a man on whose face was stupid cruelty, who sat at the steering wheel. Dr. Satan himself had not come. He had merely sent a casual accomplice to get the money. Keen's quest of the red-garbed devil who engaged in crime for the love of all love of it as some men hunt big game in Africa was not to be so easily ended. You think, Keen?
Aw, but I brought an egg and everything.
How do you feel about eggs, random henchperson? The man at the wheel of the sedan eyed the two doubtfully as they drew near. Obviously, he had been expecting only the uniformed patrolman. His fingers clutched the gear shift lever uncertainly when he saw Keen, too. But he waited till Keen had got to the car, and that was his mistake. Keen's eyes bored into his as they had drilled into the cops. The man blinked uneasily, tried to turn his head as instinct warned him of some danger he could not understand. You were to receive a package from this man, said Keen, indicating the policeman. His voice was level, quiet, soothing. Yeah, said the driver of the sedan.
Sensual.
Seductive.
Yeah, said the driver of the sedan. But where do you come in? I'm the one who took it to the building. I'm to go with you to your master with it. The man's lips tightened. Oh, no, you're not.
The man's lips tightened. He'd been reading his book about kissing.
Wait, Frank, is that you?
Yeah, it's me, Frank. Are we having this kissing party or not? You, me, the cop? Are we doing this?
Well, not the cop. He's kind of under hypnosis. That wouldn't be right.
Yeah, you're right.
He stopped.
Can you claw at me a little bit? I'm kind of into it.
just claw at me.
Frank, he takes off his gloves. Have you seen these hands?
It's powerful.
I don't think you want these clawing at you. They're very powerful. I mean, I could take
And then they fucked.
Hard.
I just picture the camera panning away from the sedan as it rocks back and forth like crazy.
The cops get just back standing, to rescuing standing those kids? In
his,
the
face. His face became stony, his eyes unwinking. Keen got into the car beside him. Then he turned to the policeman and made a pass with his hand before the other's heavy face. Drive, he snapped to the man in the wheel. The command was given none too soon. With the passing of Keen's hand across his face, the cop came out of his trance. He saw Keen, really, instead of through a hypnotic mist. He remembered seeing him before in connection with some suspicious place or happening that he couldn't quite spot at the moment. Halt, he roared as the car jumped forward. Faster, said Keen into the staring driver. Gunshots sounded from behind. The policeman was trying to shoot the tires of the blue sedan, but he left him behind and sped on toward the city limits. You will drive me to your master, Keen said to the man as he had enslaved momentarily to his will. I will drive you to my master's, the man repeated. Y'all mind if I close this out?
Go for it.
Okay. 30 miles they went from the limits of Louisville. They got to a farmhouse that was a tumble-down ruin. Behind it, there was a barn in even worse shape. The man turned into the drive of the vacant place. He got out of the car. Keen followed. The man went into the barn. There he walked directly to a mound of hay. Dr. Satan popped up and said, "Keen, fancy a rolling the hay?" There was a bit of wood at the edge of the mound. The man grasped this and pulled it. The hay mound turned as though resting on a turntable. A square hole was revealed in the barn floor with steps leading down. "Where does this go?" demanded Keen. "It strikes a short tunnel that leads into a cave. I don't know where the cave ends. I think it is a far part of the Mammoth Cave system. Anyhow, I know it goes for a long, long way. And somewhere back in it, my master, Dr. Satan, stays." Now, has Dr. Satan hidden a cave prior to this? He's been warehouse basements. He's done graveyards. He's done...
I want to say he's been in a cave, but I can't point to a particular one.
I don't think he's been in a cave.
Huh.
He's been in a spooky castle in New Jersey. I don't know what happened to that. Keen took a deep breath. He had trailed Satan into many different lairs, but none of them promised to be as appropriate as this. I'm sorry, the spooky castle in New Jersey that was called like Lucifer's Folly or something like that?
Yeah.
It was fitting that a man...
Keep saying spooky castle in New Jersey and my brain just keeps going, "Gentlemen!"
My hair helmet!
To this machine! It was fitting that a man masquerading as Lucifer should have his haunt in the bowels of the earth, near hell, if there was such a place. You've been to the afterlife, Keen, you know. The man who had driven him walked down the steps. He touched a projecting stone. The hay mound above slid into place, leaving them in a thick darkness. "Now," said Keen. The man pointed. Keen felt his arm go up, looked in the direction of his extended finger. Far ahead, he saw a pinprick of light. He turned to the man. "You will sleep," he said quietly, his hands on the man's arm. "I will sleep," was the somnolent answer. Keen felt the man lowering himself to the rock floor of the crude tunnel they were in. He felt him lie down, heard no further movement. Alone, he started toward the pinprick of light far in the distance, and toward whatever weird place Dr. Satan had fixed down here in his lair. "A lair near hell," Keen muttered as he felt his way toward the distant light. "Please, God, I can send you to hell tonight." Watch, Keen gets into the cave and he sees a bunch of black curtains ahead of him and goes, "Really? Again?"
Come on, man.
So you set everything up to be like you're in a convention center ballroom.
I do want to point out I think I've noticed a pattern with these stories. Just so we're prepared for it. I feel like if a Dr. Satan story is going to lose us, it's going to be at the end.
Yeah.
It usually is.
They've always got such solid, insane buildup, and then Paul needs to get his hand out of his ass and figure out how he's going to bring it to some sort of conclusion. And that's 9 times out of 10 where he's going to fail. I feel like the few stories we've been disappointed with, that's been the case.
Yes.
Yeah. They keep mentioning like the blue flame, which, given the context of the rest of these entries, just feels very underwhelming. Of like, okay, we've had like in The Man Who Chained the Lightning, which basically sounds like someone ripped off to make Back to the Future. We've had the Egyptian flame. So this blue flame better be really important.
I'm not expecting it to stick the landing.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it as usual, but our expectations, we have been disappointed so many times before. Yeah.
It's really, like the funny parts of the story have been in what it's looking, not presented. So, and this is the penultimate episode. It's maybe Paul used it to not overshadow the final entry, but I don't.
I hope. I don't even know if the final entry is going to give us any closure on anything either. So
I'm probably not, but you know.
At this point, we really That'll have to ask ourselves, what would Manly Wade Wellman do?
Yeah.
Well, we'd have to read some of Manly Wade Wellman's work.
which is in this issue.
And we know what he'd do. It is. Maybe
we will.
Yeah.
Maybe we shall. If you would like us to read.
Manly Wade Wellman.
would you, dear listeners, like to hear us read some Manly Wade Wellman?
It doesn't matter. We're probably going to do it anyway.
I mean, we're going to do it anyway. I just want to know if people would be interested too, but it doesn't matter. We'll still do it. We do what we want. This is our show. But if you like what we do, you can always leave us some feedback. We like that. We like to hear what people have to say. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you're at. If you're doing this on YouTube, you can do it there. That's always appreciated. You can subscribe, like, and do all that shit. I don't care. We're just doing this for fun anyway. I say all this because it's like perfunctory, but hey.
Let us know if you'd like us to dive into some pulp advertisements. I mean, we're also probably going to do that no matter what.
We are definitely going to do that. Are you
kidding? But also, let us know if you'd like us to do that. Fucking get in the comments, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, it's pretty quiet in the comments a lot of the time. Some of y'all are out there are responding, and it's nice to see. Extra special shout out to Sickeny, who's usually pretty...
We have previous examples. Getting in the comments is the best way to earn a shout out on the actual episode.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to support the rest of the show, you can always go check out the other podcasts we have on the Creative Horror Network. They're all there. They're all cool. Some of them are retired. Some of them are on hiatus. Some of them are like this one, ongoing, but happening when they can. And I should point this out because it's imperative. We're getting near the 200th episode since UCA moved fully to creative horror. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start thinking about what we want to do for the 200th episode. What I'd like to do before that, though, hopefully, is finish up Dr. Satan.
Yeah, we got maybe 3 episodes left, max.
Yeah, probably. I mean, if we're doing it the way we've been doing it, we got that. And then maybe a nice little recap where we just talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it'll be fun regardless. And I think there's just too much good pulp stuff here to like, I feel like we use Dr. Satan as a way to get into this. And now this is all I want to do. This is all I want to do anymore.
All right. Well, I got a bone to pick with someone in the past.
Okay.
I've scrolled down to the letters. I just need to read a section. Beyond Death's Gateway was decidedly weird and fantastic, but I think the author went too far this time in striving for the right effect. The picture of the world beyond is woefully unconvincing. The story reminds one of the old-fashioned fairy tale. Ernst can do really great work, and I wish he would forget Dr. Satan. Hey, fuck you, guy!
What the hell?
Get bent.
What the axe? That was a garbage level take.
What's...
Wow. Honestly, some of Paul's best work.
Hey, Donald Algier of Springfield, Missouri. Fuck you.
Who is most decidedly dead.
Absolutely dead, but go fuck your dead self.
I hope you find the afterlife like a fairy tale and underwritten.
I hope a man with incredibly powerful, inhumanly powerful hands comes along and slaps your shit.
Good evening, intrepid listeners. This is the Pasta Shade, the host of Midnight Marinara, and this podcast is part of CreativeHorror.com, a network of podcasts and creators working together to build a constructive community of horror fans. For more content like this, visit us at CreativeHorror.com.